everyone, and welcome back to The Damage Report, the place of a clean, crisp, no issues stream all the time. Jared Jackson, how's it going?
Oh, it's going well. It turns out the dragons that we have for Dragon Squad every week breathe on equipment and it melted a bit. You know, you get what you ask for. You ask for Dragon Squad. Sometimes dragons get a little bit out of hand.
They cause problems. Yesterday we had an issue where we didn't have any sound. Today we had an issue where we had staticky sound. I'm gonna make a bold prediction. Tomorrow, our mic audio is gonna function as the brown note. So everybody hold on to your butts. But anyway, okay, with that, lots of news to get to. Why don't we jump right into it?
Why not?
For several weeks now, the polls have been fairly clear. They could all be wrong, but it's pretty clear that things aren't necessarily looking good for Donald Trump. And he's been getting more and more emotional and deranged as a result of that. Well, this is what friends are for, because Fox and Friends, Trump's last remaining friends, are gonna try to make him feel better by coming up with some explanation for how actually he's doing great. Take a look.
Sandra talking about what's coming up on her show, and she was talking about the number of people that have voted already. 62.6 million have voted. But according to Google Trends data, some people are thinking about changing their vote and they're asking if they're able to do that. This is what's trending right now. Can I change my vote and Hunter Biden? So guys, do you think that's after we've learned the news of Hunter Biden, the alleged reports about him, people now want to change their Biden votes to Donald Trump votes?
Well, here's the thing, Ainsley, every state has different rules.
Correct.
But there are Michigan, Minnesota, Washington, and Wisconsin all have specific laws where you can change your mind after you vote. Now, if you vote apparently in person at an early voting place, you don't get a do-over. But if you submit an absentee ballot or one of those mail-in ballots, apparently you can go ahead and change it. In New York State, those who change their minds after mailing in a vote can go to the county board of election to request a new ballot to override the initial one with the last one sent into the county.
Or you can also in New York, Brian, go to the poll and vote in person, and that's the one that would count.
And wait for election day.
12
yeah, I know,
and
wait, right?
Yeah, and wait for election day. That's the problem.
It's like cutting back and forth between you can do this, like no, you could go, you could switch your vote, but they're like pretending that everybody is switching their vote, but they're also desperately trying to get people to switch their vote. And look, really fast before you jump in, JR. Look, I alluded in the intro to the fact that this is designed to make Trump feel better. Hey, everybody's changing their mind. It's all coming up Trumpy. Well, he was watching because he's president after all. Just 9 minutes after that video, he tweeted, strongly trending Google, since immediately after the second debate is, can I change my vote? This refers changing it to me. The answer in most states is yes, go do it. Most important election of your life. So he was watching. He's like, this refers to changing it to me. Why? But like, what from that trend means that it's changing it to Trump? But he's like now so sure, yes, they actually love me. The suburban wives are changing their vote.
Yeah, I'm not an analytics person or an internet trending person and go through the numbers of how things click, because I think it's incredibly boring. But I decided to run a short test, you know, as soon as I saw this story. I went to Google and I wrote can. And the rest of the sentence was, I change my vote. Just saying, if I write can, the first thing that comes in is, I change my vote. So it's the first thing that pops up. I'm not sure how many people did it organically before it became a trend or before it became like a suggested search, but that's how these things work. Once it's getting searched, it gets searched on top of more and more. And if people are searching Hunter Biden and laptop, I wonder why that is. Maybe because you haven't shut up talking about it this whole time and understand that it's backfired on you. There's a story about how White House personnel and advisors are regretting their decision to go so hard on this Hunter Biden and laptop and emailing story that has come up empty for them and hasn't been very effective in the election for their October surprise, they're regretting that they wasted so much time on it, because once they fed it in Trump's small mind, he kept pushing it and kept pushing it. So anyway, who cares that there's a trend on that or a trend on Hunter Biden? There could be a trend on Dragon Squad melting computers after this morning's audio problem. Who knows? I don't care. But it doesn't mean it's really
care. And you're right. Media Matters did an analysis. This was before yesterday. Over 9 days, Fox had covered Hunter Biden and the laptop for 25 solid hours. That's madness. But anyway, okay, so you did your little test of it. That's what it auto corrects to. I saw, hey, this is trending. And I thought, you know what I'm gonna do, because I'm in journalism, I'm going to ask literally the most obvious follow-up imaginable. I'm going to do the bare minimum of additional research to add a bit of context to this, that apparently the three hosts of Fox and Friends, who collectively probably make $15 million a year or more, couldn't be bothered to do, which is, has this trended before? Mm-hmm. And you're gonna be shocked to find out it has. But you're not gonna be shocked to find out when it trended, because I decided to search on Google Analytics for can I change my vote in the month leading up to the 2016 election. And what do you know? It was trending then, exactly as much as it's trending now. I decided, oh my God, what if the conspiracy goes really deep? I'm gonna search in the month leading up to the 2012 election. And what do you know? It was trending then too. And it made me start thinking, I wonder why it would trend in the week before national elections. Maybe because that's the only time you'd be thinking about changing your votes, you doofuses. Yes, some people think about changing their votes before an election. It's happened in every election. You know what? I don't have the graphics for it, but it happens in the midterm elections too. It's not a shocker. And really fast, there's two reasons that I think they're discussing this. One is they're patting their audience and Donald Trump on the head to make them feel better. No, don't worry about the polls. Just trust the boat parades and the fact that people are changing their whatever. But the second one is more malicious. This is, I think, an argument that will be used for why they should not count votes that arrive after election day, you know, as they're tabulating the vote. This is one additional thing they're gonna say. They're gonna say, look, a lot of people wanted to change their vote and they couldn't. That's just how the election was. So even though the votes are for Biden, those people, some amount that I'll randomly make up, they don't actually want Biden, they want Trump. What do you think, JR? Final thought?
Absolutely. No, totally good thought. I hadn't even thought about that angle, because I'm always trying to think of how they may use something like this to then delegitimize the results. And that's exactly the way it's gonna go. And again, the assumption that goes straight from Trump's tweet straight to saying that means it's for me. Why does that mean it's for you? Why does that mean it's for you? Well, what about changing their vote for maybe their congressman? Maybe they want to change their vote for their senator. Who knows?
Change their vote on Prop 22. Just say the thing you want to be true. That's what makes a true alpha male.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity. The UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it,
you must unlearn what you have learned.
And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
Well, it happened. Amy Coney Barrett is on the Supreme Court. Barrett was confirmed by a vote of 52-48 on Monday evening after Democrats exhausted the procedural maneuvers undertaken to delay her confirmation. That's what CBS said. Personally, I don't even see it. I don't even see the procedural maneuvers. I know that Nancy Pelosi had arrows in her quiver. Were they candy arrows? I don't know, because there wasn't a lot seemingly done. It wasn't even like a series of epic failures to stop her from getting on the court. I honestly don't know what they did. They made a big deal out of the ACA in the hearings. That's about it. JR, I don't know. Yep. Did you see anything else? Any like last ditch, hold the door efforts to stop her from getting on the court?
Yeah, there was like a digital filibuster thing started like I think Sunday and it ran through yesterday. Where they, I mean, there was some progressive groups that were organizing, but they got a lot of senators on board and like other folks from other groups to speak for, you know, a minute or two at a time, several minutes at a time, to talk about how much this is a disaster and how we need to vote and how we need to pressure Republican senators to vote no in the last second, because that's the tactic we should go with. So, I mean, again, and I think Cenk mentioned this yesterday, because I threw that story onto the main show, but it's, I don't blame these progressive groups, because that's all they can do at this point. They're not in Congress, you know, they're not senators. It's the senators that have to be the ones that do certain things to actually represent the folks that want them to do these things. So, I mean, I'm not slamming the idea of them doing this event. It's just, that's kind of all they got left, because the elected people mm-hmm. that may have had some kind of a pull on it didn't do those things.
Yeah. Yeah. If you were a progressive group that was trying to use this to raise a little bit of money, more power to you. Hopefully the money will help flip Texas and, you know, get us a few more seats and all of that. But if you're Chuck Schumer participating in that, implying that doing that is doing your job, no, that's not your job. I know from your point of view, fundraising is the entirety of your job, but that's obviously not enough, because she's now on the Supreme Court and she's going to be on the Supreme Court 20 years after Chuck Schumer has eventually passed away. That is the scope of what we're talking about here. I understand at the end of the day, potentially there was nothing that could have been done to actually stop it. But I don't think that delaying it by literally one extra week was outside of the bounds of reason. Totally. And they couldn't even do that. And well, JR, do you have anything else to say about this? I'm just so sick, honestly.
So annoying.
I'm it's so the sick same of thing her and the entire thing.
Yeah, as you said, these things have all been said, if not by you or I or anyone else. It's all kind of been obvious. Yes, something maybe could have been done, number one. Number two, I think there's a certain percentage, I wonder how high that is, of some of these, you know, senators that are thinking, well, you know, they can push her through, but that means we'll win. Again, all this is every election cycle is politicians trying to get their job reinstated again. So that's all that really matters. Yeah, sure, a radical on the Supreme Court, this full slant, this completely hypocritical process, whatever, it's fine. People are gonna hate this and it will be in office. That's why a lot of those statements that they made during that digital filibuster or whatever they called it was get out there and vote, make sure you show them that mm-hmm. we didn't like this and put us in office. That's the end game for many of these politicians. Yep. It's not to actually stop the things from happening to the American people, it's to let them happen to the American people and then blame one side for doing it so that you can get in office. That's all any of them ever do.
You want a bit of literal end game there for you? And at some point we'll stop talking about the Avengers, but it's not gonna be today. Mitch McConnell has reached his end game, basically literally, because Mitch McConnell just adjourned the Senate until November 9th, ending the prospect of additional coronavirus relief until after the election. Because neither of two things were true, that he actually cared about the American people. He doesn't, he's off, he doesn't care. Or that he actually made the calculation that they needed to pretend to care for the purposes of the election. I understand they're not gonna actually care, but they don't even feel like they have to pretend to care. That is how cowed and whipped the Republican base is. That Mitch McConnell knows he can leave them to suffer and lose their jobs and die and all of that, and he's sure he's gonna get reelected. And he's almost certainly right. He doesn't have to protect any other Republican senators. They don't have to do the bare minimum to pretend that we actually have a representative democracy that's responsive to the actual needs, the most fervent life or death needs of the American people. So he's done, he's gone, he got what he wanted.
It's and every day. every day there should be talk. Not even saying what Mitch McConnell has done. Ask Americans, maybe the people that are voting for him, be like, how's your life going? How are things happening during COVID, during the pandemic, during this late stage with the lack of relief? How much money you pay in taxes and how much representation you actually get? Now look at what Mitch McConnell is doing. After you say that, say it again. How many times have we heard about this Hunter Biden server and email and computer and all this stuff over and over and over and over again? And after it gets disputed, after it gets shot down, after it gets obviously proven incorrect, they're still talking about it. So imagine if you have truth on your side and you won't stop talking about something that actually hurts your opponent because they're hurting the American people. Not because you're just trying to win, but because it actually hurts the American people. How about we go for that tactic?
Yeah, I'm just so sick of everything having to do with the White House, the Supreme Court, the Senate. Most of the House, honestly, how the state legislature is doing. But anyway, look, that's the future of the Supreme Court. Amy Coney Barrett is now the future of the Supreme Court. There are your stakes, by the way, stopping further damage to the Supreme Court. It's already ruined, it's wrecked, it's shattered. But giving Trump a second term and letting him, you know, replace Clarence Thomas or whoever would be like, we wouldn't even have anything to look forward to, hypothetically. So in day two of stakes week, I think it's being made pretty clear. I don't know if we need to do as much in this area. But let's move on to Brett Kavanaugh and another big issue. Donald Trump is continuing his effort to lay the groundwork for challenging any number of different aspects of the vote as it comes in next week and trying to find huge swaths of the votes to simply cancel. And he's being very clear about that. He tweeted this. A tweet that I literally couldn't copy because it is being partially blocked by Twitter, but there it is. Big problems and discrepancies with mail-in ballots all over the USA. How would he know? How would he know? He doesn't know, he's just saying it. Must have final total on November 3rd. So that's what he wants, sure. That's what he's gonna want. That's almost certainly what Amy Coney Barrett's gonna give him because he wouldn't have nominated her if she wasn't going to protect him. The issue is that it's not just her. Brett Kavanaugh yesterday participated in a ruling that is gonna make it more difficult for ballots to be cast. It's gonna disenfranchise possibly tens of thousands of people. And in a way that makes clear that he would be willing to sign on to not counting mail-in ballots after election day. So let's go through what I'm talking about here. On Monday evening, the Supreme Court decided in a 5-3 decision that any Wisconsin ballots dropped into the mail tomorrow must arrive at their destination by election day in order to be counted. A district court had instituted a 6-day grace period in order to accommodate what Justice Elena Kagan described as, quote, unprecedented administrative and delivery delays in her dissent from the court's majority decision. A majority decision that, by the way, would today be 6-3, of course, with Amy Coney Barrett. Ballots postmarked by election day could still be counted if they arrived within that window. So because it's a pandemic, because a lot of people are gonna be voting by mail, and because the mail system across the country was purposefully decimated by Louis DeJoy and the Republicans, they decided, you know what? It's taking much longer for mail to get there. It is taking an unreasonably long time. People would put their ballot into the mail thinking it would make it there by election day, and it wouldn't through no fault of their own. So we're gonna extend it by 6 days. And in a 5-3 ruling, including by Justice Kavanaugh, they said no. If you sent your mail 6 days, 7 days, 9 days before the election, and it doesn't make it there by election day, and on average in some states it's taking 10 plus days, your vote is not gonna be counted. We're just gonna cast it out. We don't care. Now that is scary enough. I'm gonna give you his reasoning for why in a moment, but JR, I wanted to give you an opportunity to jump in first.
Well, I mean, you're gonna give his reasoning for it, and I think we might already know it. We just may not know what he may say. I don't know how you can watch this happen from the coordination of dismantling the things at the post office that will allow for this to happen smoothly, to then the end game of this now being, hey, if you actually put your vote, your ballot in the mail, in time, it no longer counts. Not by any fault of your own, but because you trust this system of this country that you live in, that you're supposed to say that you trust and love this system of the country you live in, the best in the world that we keep touting. But by no fault of your own, your actual ballot can mean nothing because we purposefully screwed it up. Purposefully screwed up. So that's the legacy that we want to continue to have in this country, or at least is that the shining light on the hill that we want to let the rest of the world know that we now embody? Oh yeah, so we destroy the system that allows for free and fair elections. And then when you participate in that system, we say it's your fault and you don't get to vote.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, basically. Okay. Yeah. Now that is horrible, but let's throw on top Kavanaugh's argument for this. So this is what Brett Kavanaugh said in that ruling. For important reasons, most states, including Wisconsin, require absentee ballots to be received by election day, not just mailed by election day. Those states want to avoid the chaos and suspicions of impropriety that can ensue if thousands of absentee ballots flow in after election day and potentially flip the results of an election. So I'm gonna let a dissenting judge respond to that. I will say, maybe we could have avoided those suspicions and them flowing in afterward if the post office hadn't been purposefully destroyed. And you know that full well, Kavanaugh. You know Absolutely. What they were doing. You're pretending you don't. Then he goes on to say, and those states also want to be able to definitively announce the results of the election on election night, just like Trump was saying in his tweet, or as soon as possible thereafter. Moreover, particularly in a presidential election, counting all the votes quickly can help the states promptly resolve any disputes, address any need for recounts, and begin blah, 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 blah. So he's saying, even though there is no reason that the election has to be called on the actual night, and many, many elections have not been, the media projecting a winner is a different thing than the states actually certifying a winner. That is the most standard thing in the world, is that it's not called on election night. Kavanaugh is now jumping in and pretending that it needs to be called on election night, even though that's not actually how it normally goes. So here's the dissent from Justice Elena Kagan, who responds to a couple of these concerns. Justice Kavanaugh alleges that suspicions of impropriety will result if absentee ballots flow in after election day and potentially flip the results of an election. But there are no results to flip until all valid votes are counted. Absolutely. And nothing could be more suspicious or improper than refusing to tally votes once the clock strikes 12 on election night. To suggest otherwise, especially in these fractious times, is to disservice the electoral process. So that partially, I think, is a warning that she knows that he is going to sign on to a call to not count votes, not just received after election day, but counted after election day. It's not flipping. It's not flipping. Like, we always have this joke on election night that here comes so and so. They're not new votes. They're all votes. In fact, those mail-in ballots were cast long before the day of votes. They just take longer to count. They are every bit as valid. Kavanaugh knows that, but he also knows that they're less likely to favor his chosen candidate. He's not some apolitical robot. He is a hardcore conservative Republican who is going to lie and deceive and twist the law to get Donald Trump reelected. And it is on display. This is not some hypothetical. We're not talking about next Tuesday or the Saturday after that or a month after that. Right now, they are already making changes to states to make it so that some votes aren't going to be counted. The 10, 20, 30,000 votes might end up not being counted as a result of that decision that they just made last night.
And historically, which party wants fewer votes to be counted? Republican Yep. Party does. They've said it openly and throughout history. And every time they try to subvert any part of the election process, it's to make sure that they suppress voters. That's just the way it's always works. I want you to think about one last thing. Sorry, you guys. I know we're a bit past what we're trying to do on this. But the Supreme Court justices are supposed to be there for life so that you can eliminate things like bias, or voting particularly for one side or for the president that appointed you. It's supposed to eliminate that. That's the whole point of it. So people can have this trust that, oh, they're not under the suspicion or not under the pressure of being taken out because of the way they rule may anger the people who put them in place. Instead, now we openly say it, by the way, justices are now put there for the exact opposite reason, so that you have a lifetime of taking part in biased rulings and then and making your decisions based off of your political leanings, not based off of just being there for life. Instead, it's, oh, he's gonna vote my way for life. That's what we need. It's openly said. It's completely flipped the reason why we have lifetime appointments.
Man, yeah. Okay, well, I hope people are paying attention to this. We're warning you. We're warning you. Jared Kushner, a famed fail son, is here to tell the African American community what they need to do to succeed, even though I don't think literally anyone has asked for his input. So here he is yesterday talking about success and what you need to do to get it.
And again, one thing we've seen in a lot of the black community, which is mostly Democrat, is that President Trump's policies are the policies that can help people break out of the problems that they're complaining about. But he can't want them to be successful more than they want to be successful.
You get what I'm saying there? You get what the implication of that?
Oh, absolutely. You know, these lazy black folks don't want to do anything else but sit around on their butts and expect someone to give them something because they don't actually want success. So what he's seen in this black community is that. What does Jared Kushner do in the black community? What black communities has he visited? Which community leaders has he discussed the issues with? Or has he spoken at them the way he just did again now? So what are some of those policies that the Trump administration has been tossing around that black folks just reject? And by the way, black folks, this is just general broad based and just talking about black people in the country. What about your black Republicans? Are they the ones that are listening to the things that Trump is going to do for black America? And how do you connect just a bunch of people? Just because they're all black, suddenly they all just, we have weekly meetings where we go, this is what we're doing this week, black people. Black people, we're going to not listen to
this. I think it's a Zoom.
Yeah.
It's a big Zoom.
Nowadays it's a Zoom. Where are the black folks meeting to make this one broad sweeping answer of how we want to reject success? Or we want to reject any way to actually go about success. Because, you know, black folks have this memo we put out every week. I got mine. It's just, you know, I have to hide it from you guys. But I got this one memo from the main black guy. And he told me, hey, you guys, let's stay away from that success thing. It doesn't work well for us. We'd rather just sit on the sidelines in this country that we've participated in our entire existence. And then just not take part in it. We don't want that. How about the successful black people? You know, you just complained about them a few months ago, the LeBron Jameses that are actually doing something and trying to change the way we approach education and our election systems in this country. LeBron James is doing that. Is he not a successful black person? He doesn't agree with you. So is he not successful anymore? Which one is it? Or you want to continue to push this narrative and this stereotype that black folks, number one, aren't successful, which is BS. And then the ones that are successful only did it because they went the right way that you would believe in.
Yeah.
It's not even, there's no dog whistles anymore. Those have been tossed out when Trump first went down the damn escalator. So just speak directly to your racist and then dog out the actual targets of the people that you want to continue to keep down.
Jer, you are acting. Yeah, I respect you. You're acting as if the recipe for success is complicated. It's not. It's basically like Sprite. It's just lemon and lime and presumably a glass. There's two ingredients to success, and Jared Kushner is merciful. He already gave you one. You have to want to be successful. I'm a very nice guy, and I probably look a little bit like him, so I'll give you the other one. You have to be handed hundreds of millions of dollars by your family. That's all it takes, is wanting to be successful and being handed hundreds of millions of dollars so that you can fail over and over and over for your whole life and it never actually catches up to you. It's really the Donald Trump school of success. And now you have all of the ingredients. Being lectured to by Jared Kushner about what it takes to be a success is the richest thing in the world other than the family that gave him everything he has, basically. As Don Bayer said, born on third base, thinks he hit a triple, that should be on his tombstone someday. Not Don Bayer's, on Jared Kushner's. Yeah, just handed money, handed opportunities, handed skyscrapers, and eventually handed positions in the White House by a guy even less well equipped and experienced to actually do something about those things. So anyway, Jared Kushner, like no one was asking. It's the definition of the absolutely nobody meme from Jared Kushner, yeah, right there. You want a little bit more? You want a little bit more, Jared Kushner?
Yeah, sure.
Here he is talking about George Floyd and the protests that have been going on throughout this year.
So look, there's been a lot of discussion about the issues that were needed in the black community for the last years, but particularly it intensified after the George Floyd situation. And you know, you saw a lot of people who were just virtue signaling. They'd go on Instagram and cry, or they would, you know, put a slogan on their jersey or write something on a basketball court. And quite frankly, that was doing more to polarize the country than it was to bring people forward.
Jer, I've been waiting to find out what the actual effect of all of this social conversation and movement has been. And I've been waiting to find out from Jared Kushner whether it was a good thing for black Americans or not. Apparently it wasn't.
So apparently it wasn't. It was just a bunch of virtue signal on Instagram and then on your jerseys and on basketball courts. I remember when people were out in the streets protesting the things that were going on and protesting all the police murders because of what happened with George Floyd. And that was finally like a rallying cry for more than just black folks to come forward and be disgusted with the way we've always been treating people in this country. So I remember when that happened and they said, how dare these thugs run out in the streets to start burning their communities and flipping police cars and attacking law enforcement. Which one is it? Are they sitting on Instagram virtue signaling, or are they in the streets trying to protest what's been going on? Which one is it? No matter what we do, it is a problem. That's what the answer is. If you stay quiet, why are you staying so quiet? It must not be a problem. If you get loud, why are you so loud? You're so aggressive. This is what's wrong with your community. If you go on the internet and say, hey, we're gonna organize and do this. Hey, why are you just on the internet sitting around doing nothing? No matter what you do, you're wrong. That's where the power structure comes in. If you're sitting in a position of power like this guy is, by absolutely no work of your own by getting there, if you're sitting in your position of power, you can dole out and tell people what they've done wrong and what they did right. And oh, maybe you shouldn't have done it this way. Maybe you shouldn't have that way. Maybe I'd listen to you if you decide to come and kiss my feet and then say that you're in support of me and my father-in-law, then maybe I'll listen to you and then do nothing about it. We know how this whole thing works. And just sorry, I got a text from the lead black guy. He told me to shh about the emails.
Who is he? Give us a clue. Come on.
He told me to keep it quiet because I've already said too much.
Okay. I don't want to get you muted on the next Zoom. How racist are the Republicans? Well, it turns out that if you're a little bit tricky in your polls, you can get a pretty good idea, by the way. So let's talk about the results of a January Washington Post Ipsos poll. Found that more than 8 in 10 black Americans think that Trump is a racist. 65% think that now is a bad time to be black in America. So JR, that Zoom call, they polled it. They're pretty sure that he is a racist. But that's black Americans looking at MAGA heads and evaluating them. What if we could actually talk to the MAGA heads and get them to admit it without realizing what they're doing? Well, they have that. A public religion research institute asked respondents whether they believe that, quote, it always makes the country better when all Americans speak up and protest unfair treatment by government. Then it asked the same question, but substituted black Americans for all Americans. And so these were two different groups who were asking questions. Some people were asked about everyone. Some people were asked about whether it's good when black Americans protest the government. Democrat respondents made no distinction between the two questions. 71% answered yes to both. Among Republicans, however, 49% believed it made the country better when all Americans spoke up and protested the government, but just 24% believed it when black Americans spoke up and protested. And by the way, among Republicans whose most trusted news source is Fox News, the gap was 47% yes for all Americans and just 10% for black Americans to do exactly the same thing.
You mean all that stuff that we say we're founded on and the principles of the country rising up. By the way, these Republican voters are also the ones who like to talk about the tyrannical government that we have to make sure you have clutch your guns close to your heart to make sure you're ready to go and flip over once they start stepping on your rights. Remember that? That's the whole basis. I'm surprised only 49% of Republicans only want that, just even for the folks that they think are the ones that have the right to do this. It's the way it's always been. If you've demonized a group long enough, and if you've definitely taken away their rights, and then also throw all these characteristics on them that they're the worst kinds of humans in the world, then of course you won't think they have any reason to take part in the same level of dispute and opposition to government entities that you have. You can come and say, I'm gonna shoot you, I'm gonna come kidnap your governor. This is being said and partially planned. But if you just go on the streets and protest, that's a bigger problem. Think about that.
Bigger problem. Yeah, and like that 10% of people who love Fox who think it's good when black Americans protest unfair treatment. Like the question wasn't when they're rioting in the streets. It was just, should they protest if they're being treated unfairly? And only 10% said yes. I would like to meet that 10%, by the way. Is that libs hate watching? I don't know. No, I guess they're registered Republicans, but and think about that. They have been trained to think that it's illegitimate. And honestly, why wouldn't they? I mean, they watch Fox News. It's the core is racism. That's all it is. There's a little layer of fake populism, but that's a micron deep. It's racism. And of course they're gonna think that black people protesting unfair treatment makes America worse off It's because they think the unfair treatment makes America better off. They want the unfair policies of the government, the unfair way that the media, society, all of that. They think that that's what made America great. Remember, they want to make it great again. They want to go back to those times. No, they're going to find it really inconvenient when people are trying to stop us going back to the 1950s.
It's also a characteristics of the way that our system works, as far as if you're in a capitalistic country like we are, and it's cutthroat, and the only way you can get ahead is by cutting the guy's throat that's right next to you and slightly beneath you, you're going to go to cutting throats, or else you're not going to make it. Hey, I've got a family. I need to cut some throats in order to make it. I'll cut some throats. I don't care who it is. But if you have a collective narrative that says this particular, or these several particular groups of people are a hindrance on you making it, and feeding your family or getting to the success rate where you think you can hand down some riches or some wealth to your offspring, why not cut the group's throat that we historically have called animals, less than human, violent, angry, and not intelligent, lazy, don't want to do anything for themselves. Jared Kushner just went through all this. These aren't old tropes. This was said yesterday, or if not that, the day before. Yeah. This isn't old. This isn't going back to 1957. This is the same narrative and the same thought process they've always had. And when you demean a group of people to this degree, an entire group of people to this degree, you can easily say, I don't care about them. They're just animals. It's the same narrative every time. It makes it really easy. We euthanize dogs every day in shelters, and people don't cry about it. Some do, but we don't cry about it because, like, they're just dogs. So if you equate humans to dogs, certain ones, you can just stomp all over them. It doesn't matter.
Yeah. Let me add just one more stat from that poll. 57% of Republicans believe that whites face a lot of discrimination. Just 52% believe that Black Americans do. Among Democrats, 13% said whites encounter a lot of discrimination. 92% said blacks do. So a little bit of a difference there between Democrats and Republicans. They think that white people are more discriminated against than Black Americans. And again, of course, I get it. None of this is super shocking. They're literally told by Tucker Carlson every day that white Americans are more discriminated against. But, like, I'm white. I don't know what the discrimination that I'm supposedly suffering from every day is supposed to be. I'm, like, racking my brain. Okay, yes, JR won't let me go on that Zoom call, but I get it. Okay, that's discrimination. Other than that, I honestly don't know what it is. There is so much explicit benefit, the white privilege that you get, and then so much implicit stuff too that you have to be really, really trying to pay attention and trying to ferret it all out to even understand all of the ways that you're benefited. And maybe for some of these Republicans, if they don't talk to Black people, they don't have Black friends, they don't know anything about that worldview, and they don't want to know, it's easy to create this fiction where, in fact, you are the biggest victim ever. But man, from the outside looking in on that, that is a sad way to go about your life.
Yeah, it's the only way to hold on to any kind of position that you have, is to then do the reverse psychologist. Oh yeah, there's so much racism for us. So who's backing up this racism? What law system has been put in place that targets white Americans in this country? You know what? As a straight male in this country, I have privileges. I'm a Black person too, but I have privileges over other folks that maybe have the same skin tone as me, but have different sexual orientation, or also are women. So you can stack all the things that break down more and more discrimination and more bias and more help. I've never been told on anything I've ever done that, hey, EJ, you know, because you're a guy, I don't think you can. Well, I'm not going to let you do this because you're a guy. It may have been said that because I'm Black, but there's things that I have privileges because I'm a straight male in this country. Still Black, but I have privileges. If I say that out loud, I don't lose my job now. I don't lose my car. I don't lose my apartment. I don't get kicked out of stores because of it. None of that happens just because I'm a straight male. I'm just saying. So it's okay to admit something, and it doesn't mean you're going to lose those privileges.
You know, when you think about it, it is very easy to figure out the recipe for success for literally everyone who appears on Fox News. If you are part of any sort of group that is discriminated against, whether in terms of sexuality or race, gender, anything like that, religion, you go on the show and say why, in fact, the thing you're discriminated against for is bad and those people are bad. That's what you do. And if you're not a member of one of those groups, if you are a white, straight, cis male, you go on and say, oh, in fact, all of those are just the biggest weaknesses and the biggest things that you're discriminating against. It is so see-through and so perfect. It applies to literally everyone that they allow on the airwaves. Mm. What a pathetic, like, and at the same time, they will then step back at the end of the day and say, that's strength. That's what strength is, taking all of your built-in genetic advantages that you didn't have to do anything for, that society has arbitrarily decided to advantage, and saying, in fact, that makes me the strongest fighter that I have to suffer through having all of this privilege.
Yep, your entire identity is in your privilege, so much so you don't even realize it anymore.
Yeah. Ugh. Okay, let's turn to a slightly more funny story, maybe, I guess. At least we'll get to talk about someone for once that we actually are fans of. Republicans are obsessed with AOC. That's not new. They've been obsessed for a really long time, but now it's actually sort of costing them. So she is facing a Republican challenge in her reelection bid. You may not know that because it's pointless and she's going to win by a gigantic margin, but she has one. John Cummings, he's raised $9.6 million in his bid against her. I don't know what is a bigger waste of political money than that. I guess Bloomberg's run was a waste of a lot more money, but that's $9.6 million that I guarantee any number of Republicans locked in tight reelection bids or challenges would love to have a little bit of that money. But instead, it's flowing to the guy who's going up against AOC, not because he has a chance, he doesn't, but because Republican donors hate AOC with every fiber of their being, mm-hmm. and it's costing them. It's costing them. There's a Republican strategist. No, what were you gonna say?
The thing is the more popular she gets, and the more it's like almost like a pop star type of response she gets, it angers them even more because that's something that they've really been able to obtain. Like, as a politician, you need to have this popularity that just who you are attracts people. And she tends to have that on top of policies and on top of ways to speak to people and honestly reach people to who they really are. That helps. And many politicians are too stiff and square to pull that off. So the anger comes even further, like, how can we actually penetrate this armor that she's got? How do we break through it? And they have such anger, they don't realize how much they're actually helping her by not stop talking about how awesome and popular she is.
Yeah. Republican strategist Tim Doherty says, I guarantee you 75% of his contributors, John Cummings, don't know anything about him. The people that are interested in that race financially are giving because it's AOC. And again, there's an opportunity cost to that. And it's $9.6 million. Now, this is not just Republicans. Let's both sides this for a bit. Remember that Michelle Caruso Cabrera, former CNBC anchor who lost to Ocasio-Cortez in the primary, raised $2.4 million and loaned $1 million of her own money. She's now running, actually, as a candidate for the Serve America movement. She's serving something. I don't think it's America. But anyway, that now we're at well over $10 million that a combination of Wall Street and Republican donors have thrown into a massive smoldering fire because they hate AOC so much. By the way, she noticed this. She tweeted recently, one perk about a GOP motivated by hatred is that it's irrational and unstrategic. All these millions of Republicans are hate pouring into my race just for shady DC consultants to scoop up and burn is less money channeled for them in tight swing races. Which is absolutely true. Yeah. That is totally money that could be going to protect. Like, there's a lot of Republican senators who are in very tight races. Lindsey Graham has been begging for money, and it seems like the Republican donor class is like, I hear you, buddy. I'm going to John Cummings because, man, Lindsey, have you considered running against AOC? Then maybe you get some donations. I don't know.
I don't know. So with money in politics and giving at the end of races, and oh, I've raised this much more money. The way that transfers into what you do with your political campaign isn't always just a sweet win. I never really got that. Yo, I got my money. I'm gonna run some more ads. Saying what? What is it you're gonna say that's gonna dispute the reality of the situation? I don't care how much you say it. I'm gonna flood the airwaves with these false, ridiculous ads that mean nothing. Okay. The people watching are going, this is stupid. So what's the point of spending that money just to say you did? I don't know.
Maybe.
It really shows that the connection between money and getting elected is so intertwined that they can't not admit it, that, well, the more money I got, the more chance I have to win. That's all that matters. Isn't that antithetical to the way we're supposed to think about the elections and the way we're supposed to think about representation. The person with the most money wins. Really? That's what we want to say out loud?
Listen to this lib with his democracy talk. And you're right. Look, for him, no ad he's going to run is going to win him the election. But for those consultants, who cares? It's all money. Yeah. They already got the money. It doesn't matter who wins, which is true for a lot of them. But let's turn to a slightly related story. You know who's really obsessed with Ted Cruz? You know who's really obsessed with AOC? Ted Cruz, as obsessed as he is with being needlessly awkward in his public addresses. And remember, as I show you this video, which we're about to go to, that he is definitely going to be running for president again in a few years. So consider this the launch of his presidential race. Here he is talking about AOC.
It's Bernie and Elizabeth Warren and AOC. Who keeps stomping her foot saying, Mr. President, call me Congresswoman. Like, what the hell's wrong with you, lady? Like, that's just dumb. But that's who's setting the agenda.
Yeah, we left in that last bit because what was that? That weird, awkward, heavy breathing. Was he heavy breathing because he'd done that foot stomp? And then there's the awkward laughter. Who is going to that weird rally? Who is going to that? But
that's your pitch. She calls. Mm-hmm. She tells you to call her Congresswoman. Who does that? That's just dumb. What? Well, that's the problem with AOC, is that she told you to call her Congresswoman one time. What? I'm going to the ballot box, man. I was totally gonna vote for AOC, but then Ted Cruz walked up and then said that she told you to call her Congresswoman. Oh man, that's a deal breaker. Where's the argument?
I think the argument is that he was saying that to ensure that his audience knows that he's a misogynist, talking about this lady and stuff like that. I don't know if it was more misogynistic or more awkward. I think it's sort of a peanut butter and jelly sort of situation. It was both of those things. But look, the particular thing that, look, he's obviously mocking her and implying, look how crazy she is that she wants to be respected based on her amazing accomplishments. But let's be clear about what he's saying. He's saying she's stomping her foot and saying, Trump, respect me. She's being pathetic in her interactions with Donald Trump. Boy, Ted Cruz has no experience with that he's trying to distract you from by bringing up AOC. But Ted Cruz, who are you doing phone calls for? Who are you pretending didn't call your wife ugly and your father an assassin? Who have you supplicated yourself to for the past few years? And you're gonna pretend, Ted Cruz, you're gonna try your best to pretend in a year or two, when Trump is finally gone, he's off on his island or whatever, you're gonna pretend that you are a big, tough, strong, weasel-faced little man and that you stood up to him. But we're gonna know that you didn't. No, man, he insulted your wife, he insulted your family, and you bent the knee to him because you thought it was in your interest. Don't try to distract us with AOC. Nobody's questioning how strong AOC is. You need to think about yourself, man. And it's gonna take more than a ferret on your face to imply that you're actually strong.
If these guys aren't dumb, I don't know. He doesn't think that's really gonna sway anyone. He just needs to waste some time. I don't know, maybe it's kissing up to certain donors that gonna, again, like we just talked about the race against AOC. They'll give money to people just for the sake that they made them cackle over a ridiculous, I don't know, I was gonna call it a joke, but it's not even a joke he was making. He was just talking. It was weird. It was very Mean Girls, except it doesn't stick. I mean,
it's so Mean weird. Girls by way of someone the Mean Girls would have never spoken to.
So weird. I mean, at least bullies have like a posse behind them that laughs at their stupid jokes so that it can seem like they're funny or making fun of you. This guy's just up there by himself breathing into a mic. Hey, AOC. Who's on that guy's side? Who went home and said, I heard Ted Cruz breathing in the mic today. I think I'm gonna vote for that guy.
Ted Cruz, keep her name out of your mouth. JR, keep her name out of your impersonation of his mouth. Because I don't like either of it. It makes both of them are bad. They're real bad and I don't like it. It may be hard to remember that Kayleigh McEnany, long before her binder of defenses of Donald Trump, used to appear on CNN. She was actually pretty critical of Donald Trump. We've talked about that in the past, but it turns out that way back in 2015, she actually spoke in particular about what it would be like if Donald Trump went up against Joe Biden. Listen to this.
Advising a campaign, which of the Democrats would you want to go head to head against?
I would say Joe Biden is who I'd want to go head to head against for the reasons you just articulated. That being said, I think the Republicans run into a problem if it is Joe Biden and if it is maybe a Trump on the other side. Because Joe Biden, one of the things he is remarkable at is really kind of being a man of the people and resonating with middle class voters, feeling like coming off as human. You know, his gaffes, as much as we make fun of them, to a certain extent, they make him look human. So in that sense, he's likable. So while, you know, I think Joe Biden would be an easier person to beat, I think. At the same time, you know, we've got Hillary Clinton's mistrust or mistruths. We have someone who is not a good politician. So it kind of is a toss up, really. But I'd say at the end of the day, probably Joe, although if Trump is against Joe, I think the juxtaposition of kind of the man of the people and kind of this tycoon is a problem. Although Donald Trump remarkably is coming off as a man of the people, despite being this, you know, wealthy business tycoon.
JR, that, I mean, look, it's fairly obvious. Basically, everyone says that about Joe Biden, but she wasn't really wrong. Like, yeah, his gaffes don't really make him unlikable. She's trying to pretend now as press secretary that they're huge issues and they go to him being crazy or something. But when she wasn't being paid to lie for him, just paid in general to deceive people, she was admitting that, yeah, no, people like someone who's a little bit real and makes mistakes and stuff like that.
Crazy enough, Kayleigh McEnany gave like an actual Republican assessment, political assessment of what the race, what she feels it would be. Yeah, she still was leaning towards Trump, but still saying she thinks Trump could beat Biden. This is again 2016, when Biden didn't actually run. But it really, it gives you a full clear illustration of the way a Republican would think and analyze something like this from their perspective versus a Republican who's now paid to demonize and campaign for their perspective. So the idea is to create this scenario where the other person's a monster and everything that they do or say, every step they take means that destruction, total collapse. But when they're not actually in the race, you can say things honestly like, yeah, there's issues that Biden has, but these are the good things about him, because that's just a normal thought process. She's not actually as dumb as she has to be now that she's working for Trump. But in order to work for Trump, you actually have to dumb down any full clear thought process that you might have, at least in the public. Maybe behind closed doors, they still say things like, hey, you know, Joe is coming off way better than Donald is this week. Maybe we should do this. And then when they present Donald with it, he goes, what are you talking about? Me, words? No, let's not go that route.
Yeah. I think that when you become press secretary, they do two things. They suck all your brains out of your head, and then they give you a binder of things to say. And I've got the ultimate example of that. So I'm gonna skip to the last graphic, by the way. So back before she was working as press secretary, she was like, Joe is like warm and funny and he comes off as a real person. She was being honest. And now she can't do that because that's her job, is to not be honest. Responding to her 2015 comments in a statement to CNN, McEnany said that since then, she has learned of what she called Biden's quote, profound personal corruption, and said the former vice president has become quote, an empty vessel for the liberal elites and far left. Echoing attack lines often used by the, yeah, obviously. Yeah, because she's not a person anymore. She just reads, this is the line I'm supposed to say, personal corruption. The far left controls him. That's what I think. I don't feel anything. I don't have anything. I'm an empty husk of a person now. I just, whatever the campaign says, that's what I say.
And honestly, that's
frustrating, but really fast. My last point on this, that's super frustrating, but you know what's gonna be more frustrating? In a year when she's back on CNN as a commentator, that's gonna be more frustrating.
I mean, look at Rick Santorum. He ran for president back in 16 anyway. I think it was 16. It feels like it was way longer ago than that. And look at him on CNN every day, just spouting Republican talking points, just for the sake of having his face on there and say, here's a Republican to say stupid things that we already know that they're going to say. And for people who may say, back to my thought, for people who may say, oh yeah, what about Democrats who just kind of jump around and say whatever's needed to be said, maybe by press secretaries or campaign advisors or spokespeople? Sure, they do that. But that's why people, and we're gonna, this all ties back together. That's why progressives that are getting so popular in this country are that popular, because people can see through the BS. And when someone actually comes through and says something that they believe in and goes for an approach that they believe in without all of the political fancy icing on top of the cake, people like that. Yeah, it happens with establishment Democrats too. They jump around, jump ship, say one nice thing about somebody, then flip back and do it another way. We know that happens. We know how much the Clintons loved Donald Trump and them before. They all interact and love each other. It's just now when it comes to election time, they start pulling out the knives. How about we get consistent, be truthful, and say what you believe in, and then fight to go that direction. That's what progressives are doing. And that's why both of these establishment sides don't like that, because there's a little bit too much reality and it makes them look as fake as they are.
Yeah. So see-through, man. Like, this is one of the things that turns people off to politics. They look at that and they think, that's not a real person. That's not a person who's actually telling us what they think or feel. And they're not thinking anything, and they're not feeling anything. They're just being paid to lie to us. Anyway, JR, thank you for making this Big News Tuesday. Appreciate it. The next time we have you on the show, I mean, we're gonna be doing election coverage tomorrow. But everybody needs to know that on day one of the fallout of the election, you know, day three of election week, the first post-election show is gonna be JR Jackson. That's gonna be something. Looking forward to it, JR.
Oh man, this is all set up. This is the whole reason I chose Wednesdays. I chose a long time ago, knowing that the day after the election I'd be on.
And every election off into eternity, he will be the first guest. So JR, thank you for that.
For sure, thank you. Have guys, going, love man. It. See you.
Very excited to be joined on the program by the executive director of Color of Change PAC, Arisha Hatch. Welcome to the Damage Report.
Thank you so much for having me.
Very excited to have you on, in particular with just, you know, a few days left until the election. I've been very curious with 2020 being the way it is, this campaign being the way it is. I can imagine that Color of Change has probably been quite busy for a lot of different reasons. In terms of the election, what are some of the focuses throughout this year of the organization? What have you all been working on?
Well, there's obviously so much uncertainty around this election, as well as so much disinformation targeting Black voters. We saw that very quickly in clearly in 2016, how Black voters were being targeted in different ways than they have been in the past. And so our focus has really been on, one, being in contact with our more than 7 million members across the country, making sure that they're prepared and ready and have all the information that they need in order to participate, but also having our members become volunteers and talk to low propensity, irregular Black voters about what's at stake in this upcoming election.
You know, I'm really curious about that, because I know obviously you're 100% right. There's been historically tons of misinformation. This year has been no different. But we also know that the pandemic has thrown the election into a bit of chaos, and the pandemic has affected Black Americans disproportionately. So as the organization is talking, as you said, to low propensity voters, is concerns around the pandemic, whether it's safe to vote, those sorts of things, is that something that you're hearing a lot about?
Absolutely. And, you know, I think the thing that we saw very early on is that although the pandemic should have been leveraged in order to open more polling systems, centers, in order to make it easier for people to vote, we actually saw right wing people shutting down more ballot centers, pushing back against vote by mail as a means to vote. And so we've seen this sort of like crackdown that we think really furthers and enables you know, the level of obstacles and hurdles that have been placed in front of Black people in order to participate. And so what we've been really preaching over the last several weeks is for people to have a plan to vote early if possible, but to vote in whatever way they feel comfortable in this upcoming election, given the swirling disinformation that's happening in their communities and online.
Yeah, I was curious about that. I don't know if it's possible to really get a read on it. But in terms of access to the vote, I mean, as you point out, there's been a ton of voter suppression. There's gonna be attempts at voter intimidation from these poll watchers throughout the country. But we also have in some states expanded access to vote by mail and early voting. Overall, with all of that, the suppression as well as some of the limited measures that have been put in place because of the pandemic, how would you compare the access and ease of voting in this election to past elections?
I actually think that Black folks have experienced this before, and it might be feel new to some of our allies in the same way that, you know, folks are experiencing what's happening in terms of like criminal justice and police violence and new ways. Like it feels new to a set of people. I actually feel like some of those barriers have been spread to others. This conversation about vote by mail, which has been perpetuated by Trump, causing insecurity. As we surveyed and polled our members, many of them had a deep distrust for vote by mail, and yet signed up for it because they feel like it's a civic duty. Many of our members and the people that we're talking to have a deep distrust of government's ability to actually make the changes that they want to see, but believe it is their civic duty and their responsibility to participate. And so in a lot of ways, it's not new. And yet we want people to be as safe as possible. We know that the pandemic has had disproportionate effects on our community. And so we're just really encouraging folks to make a plan to vote early. If they trust the vote by mail system, to vote by mail or by absentee, depending on their state's laws. But yeah, I think that's the state we're sort of in.
You know, you mentioned a couple of things there. So obviously you have the election, and then you also mentioned criminal justice, and there have been protests for something like 8 months now, obviously. When you're talking with these voters, is there a connection between those two things? Are people seeing their either participation or not participating in the election as sort of an outgrowth of all that's been all of the protests and all of the discussion and all of that throughout this year? Is that a thing that people are linking in their minds?
Absolutely. But they're making the connection between the local races that they want to focus on. There are a set of district attorney races or city council races that they really believe, once you talk to them about the fact that these races exist, they believe that these public officials at the local level could actually make the changes that they want to see. At the national level, at the federal level, what folks are really talking about is the culture that's been enabled, the racist, sort of sexist culture that's being enabled by Trump and other right-wing rhetoric. And I what we're hearing from folks is that they understand that we can't make the changes that we want to see with that culture in place. They don't necessarily believe that Biden or Senator Harris are, you know, the most radical folks, as like the right wing would like to term them, or the you know, the folks that are really going to make significant change in this issue. But they do understand that the environment and the vibe, sort of, I think is how one of our members explained it, the vibe has to be different in order to make the shifts that we need to see.
Yeah, you know, you mentioned the racist rhetoric, and the closing appeal in terms of commenting on race from the Trump administration has been an interesting one. Just you know, I believe it was yesterday they deployed Jared Kushner to talk about how he seemed to be implying that Black Americans don't want to be successful and they need to change that. You had Trump at the last debate, his last, you know, direct appeal to the American people, saying that he's the least racist person in the room. I guess they think this strategy could work. Obviously, I'm white, but it doesn't seem to me that that would be appealing if I weren't. I don't know. Do you disagree? Is there anything in there that hypothetically could help them make inroads amongst Black voters?
I've seen zero evidence to believe that the Trump campaign is actively courting Black voters. I believe that the Trump campaign is trying, actively working to deter Black voters, as we saw more evidence from several news reports in the last several weeks. They're working to convince Black folks that the Democratic Party isn't for them, that their vote won't count, or does it matter? But really, all of their messaging around black people and black voters, I believe, is being targeted towards white swing voters. And really dog whistling towards certain biases. I watched the Jared Kushner interview as well. And what I believe, what I saw as a person that was on message for his campaign, he wasn't speaking off the cuff. These were talking points. This is what the campaign and the Trump administration believes about black people. And it is consistent with their approach and talking about black folks. I don't see an active recruitment effort. I see an effort to depress us and to make a set of swing white working class voters afraid of us or feel like they are not racist by continuing to vote for Trump.
Yeah, I felt the same way while watching the Jared Kushner interview. It felt like it wasn't an appeal to black voters. It felt like it was an appeal to white conservatives who want to believe that it's not government policy that's been responsible for economic inequity. It's some sort of psychological or moral flaw or something like that. So going forward, I'm curious. We have all the suppression that we've already seen within this election and historically, racial discrimination in terms of culling voter rolls, mail-in ballots with traditional black names being rejected at higher rates, all of that. So they're already trying to cut out as many votes as they can. We know that there is a chance that after Election Day, starting on Election Day, there will be legal challenges to not count certain votes or throw out certain sets of votes. Is that a thing that Color of Change is getting ready for in terms of that legal and social conflict?
Absolutely. There's been a lot of scenario plan happening. I think a lot of the progressive movement doesn't want to feel caught surprised or flat-footed in the same way that we felt in 2016. Obviously, most people didn't expect for Trump to win. And so I know that the movement has adjusted and understands that message. And as such, is preparing for a lot of different scenarios in the aftermath of the election. We're preparing for the reality that we might not know Tuesday night who is going to be the next president of the United States. And that's a new normal for us as a country, but probably a more appropriate approach to how we decide who should lead the free world. We should actually count every single ballot. But there are lots of preparations going on. There's obviously a lot of uncertainty. And for a lot of black folks, this level of voter suppression, the obstacles that are being put in front of people in order to participate, as well as the things that are happening on the back end to reject applications are not really new. This is what has been happening in black communities for generations. And yet we're continuing to march people to the polls. We believe it is our civic duty to vote. And we believe that we have a system that is strong enough to support increased vote by mail, to support a higher vote count. We believe that the democracy should be able to support it, but we're prepared for the worst as well.
I hope that it should. I think that it should. I don't know if, based on the experience of this year, I still think that it can support it. All that they've done with the post office and everything has been so underhanded. But I appreciate the optimism and having a really effective organization out there trying to make sure that as many votes as possible are there and that also are counted. And so we really do appreciate that. Arisha Hatch, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.